So Children's Hospital Ireland was founded in, well, very early in 1969, really, by a group of parents who at the time, would you believe, parents weren't able to visit their children in hospital for more than maybe a half an hour a week. And one particular woman, Pat Hemmons, wrote to the Irish Times after she had read an article in the paper. She wrote to the Irish Times and said, you know, how come we're not paying any attention to the fact that children can't have their parents stay with them in hospital? And actually, while their children were getting kind of medically good enough treatment, pretty good treatment, they were coming out socially disadvantaged, if you like, where the relationship with the parents, if they were in hospital for a long time, had kind of weakened, and they were suffering as a result. So this woman, it was very much a coffee table, volunteer, organic organization. Group of parents got together, and their first piece of work was really around lobbying for parents to be allowed to stay in hospital. So those early women, some of whom are with us still today, and we've met with them, just said, I went in with my child in 1970, 1971, and the doctor, you know, I left the child in, and I just said, I'm not leaving, when it came at night time, and the doctors were, and the nurses were kind of pushing them out of the hospital, and they said, no, I'm not leaving. So that was really where it began. And then they continued to fight for the right of children to have play in hospital, the right to have education, very much just bringing a bit of normal life back into hospital, because really there was very little for children to do at that time. So they were the early beginnings. So it was officially founded in 1970.
When you listen to the description of what parents were looking for, time with their kids to help with the healing, education for their kids, kind of play, it all sounds like very common sense things, but it was a different landscape back then than we have now in terms of the rights of children.
It was absolutely a different landscape. Yeah. So I think parents, and I think, you know, the medics at the time would have admitted it even also, that parents were considered a little bit to be in the way, that while the doctors and nurses got on with their work, and actually they felt that the children got more upset when the parents left. They might have come in and visited, and they just didn't want to have to deal with that separation piece afterwards. You know, it's funny nowadays, because we train, you know, hundreds of volunteers every year, and it's really come 365, where, you know, parents are staying with their child. They want to stay with them 24 hours a day, and our volunteers are saying, look, it's okay to take a break, it's okay to get a walk, get a shower, look after your other children, whatever. So it has come a long way, but with that, the challenges are different now today.
And how has the work of the organisation Children in Hospital Ireland changed down through the years?
Well, in the early days, it was very much about advocating for those basic rights. And then some of the women and the volunteers who were involved started to go into the hospital and bring in play materials and just say, you know, there's a child who I know has come from Cork. I know they don't have a mum or a dad coming to visit them, and we're going to go in and bring in some play materials. So in the 70s, we began to formalize that. We advocated for hospital play specialists to be put into the hospital. And this is paid staff, of which there are many today in the hospitals, but not enough. Our intention was that we would put in play volunteers until the HSE were able to fund enough play specialists in the hospital so that every paediatric ward would have a play specialist. That never came to pass. But actually, you know, nowadays we have quite a formalized volunteer force of up to 400 volunteers around the country who go in and provide play and bring a bit of normality. And, you know, it's different to the professional role of a play specialist. So, you know, we really feel that the volunteer play role brings something different. So while we initially intended it to be a stopgap until there were enough professional play specialists, we now see the value of, you know, a formal volunteer role of just bringing that bit of the outside world, bringing the community into the hospital and bringing a bit of normality to the children.
Can I talk to you a little bit about the impact of COVID-19 on your work and now the impact of the cost of living crisis?
So we've engaged in a lot of advocacy and policy work in the last couple of years. And just before COVID hit, we carried out a piece of research with over 300 parents, and we also interviewed social workers and staff in hospitals, but also in other NGOs who work with children with long-term illnesses. So that piece of work, the piece of research, was called Childhood Illness Financial Stress, and we talked about just the non-medical costs associated with childhood illness. So when a child goes into hospital, if there are two parents, one more than likely has to give up work, so you lose that salary straight away. If you're parenting alone, it's likely that parent will have to give up work. So huge financial challenges there. If you're travelling to Dublin, if your child is hospitalised in Crumlin and you're living in, you know, in Donegal or in the Midlands or whatever, you may have to Airbnb in Dublin. There's massive costs associated with it, extra childcare costs, etc. So that was difficult enough, and we had started doing a lot of advocacy work on that. During COVID, I think parents found it really, really difficult, of course. Unfortunately, our volunteers had to be pulled out of the hospital just at a time when the rest of the country were putting their hands up to volunteer and were engaging in volunteering for infection control purposes. Nobody was allowed in the hospital. It was really, really difficult on parents because one parent had to decide to stay in the hospital with a sick child, and they couldn't rotate, so they couldn't take turns even in the early stages of COVID. The cafes were closed, you know, and actually one of the biggest sources of information and support in hospital for parents is other parents. It's not so much the hospital staff, but just from the social point of view and from the finding out information, it's other parents, but they weren't able to kind of gather in the ward or in the parents' room and have a cup of tea. So it was extremely isolating for them. Yeah, I mean, COVID has passed now. We're hitting another crisis, as you say, of the cost of living. I don't think the general population really realise the difficulties that families have when a child goes into hospital, particularly if it's long term. I think many families for whom that happens, you know, when they come out of it, they probably don't want to talk about it. They're just glad that their child is safe and healthy. But I think when they're in the midst of it, it's a really, really difficult time financially. So we're doing a lot of work at the moment to advocate on behalf of those parents. And one of the key asks that we have is that we're looking for a social welfare payment, a social protection payment for parents when their child is in hospital, to help cope with those additional costs and the loss of income as well.
Again, when you say you're looking for social welfare for parents, it seems like a very obvious solution, but it obviously isn't something that has ever been put in place.
No, it hasn't. And indeed, we looked for it 25 years ago. We carried out a similar piece of research in 2004, I think it was. And the recommendations, we asked for the same thing. And it was kind of shocking to do that research, you know, 20, 25 years later and find the same issues still arose for parents. It does seem, you know, a really obvious support to have to put in place. I think a lot of the political movement around it has been on the kind of low-hanging fruit, like looking at the parking charges, which we also would campaign for change, and looking at accommodation and trying to fix those short-term things. Bringing in a new payment will take a long time, but actually we feel we've made huge strides in the last couple of years. And in the last two budgets, the changes to the domiciliary care allowance has been something that we've lobbied very hard for as well, where now if your child goes into hospital from birth, before there was no payment that a parent could access for that. And now, as a result of the last budget, they will get a domiciliary care allowance for the first 6 months that child is in hospital. But really, I think the state feel that if the child is in hospital, I think their argument is that the state is looking after the child and therefore there aren't costs involved, whereas, you know, the hospitals would be almost considering it a child protection concern if the parent wasn't with the child all that time. So a parent still has all those costs of leaving work and travelling and being by the child's bedside. So we will continue to look for that payment to be put in place.
So, Anna, what are your hopes and dreams for the organisation?
So over the next few years, we have plans to increase our advocacy work significantly. And a lot of that is based on a project that we're currently working on to improve information for parents. So one of the things that we found in the recent research that we did was that parents find it difficult to just get the information that they need when they need it. So we've got funding at the moment to develop what we're calling a parents resource hub. And that will be a one-stop shop for parents to find out everything about, you know, before their child goes to hospital, what they might need to know, the impact of a diagnosis, what does shared care look like between two hospitals, how do I access any supports, either voluntary or statutory, that I might be entitled to, and even just things like training around dealing with living with a child with a long-term illness, financial planning, all those kind of things that just come with having a child who may be long-term ill. In addition to that, we're doing a piece on supporting teenagers when they transition from paediatric care to adult care, which I know is a huge concern for many children, that, you know, children are so well looked after in the paediatric hospitals, and then you may find that you've got two or three different consultants in different adult hospitals. And really from 16 plus, it's very young to be kind of dealing with those sitting in an outpatient clinic in the Mater or in James's or whatever. So just kind of supporting children to do that. So that's all on the information side. So we've a lot of work to do and a lot of potential for work in that area. Obviously, we're also looking at moving into the new children's hospital, which will be a huge change. And the three children's hospitals, as we know them, will be gone in 2 years. People have very strong connections with those hospitals, and it will be a big transition for children, for families, for staff, but also for our volunteers. We'll be doubling the number of volunteers that we have, and they'll be on the floor in St. James's in the new hospital in 3 years' time. So we've a lot of big changes and big potential ahead of us that we're looking forward to.